All right, so I am so outside my comfort zone that it's not even funny. And when I was asked to do this, the first thing I said was, heck no. So from all that I've learned through Dr. Rita Marie and Laura Fine, I'm like, well, that means I'm gonna say yes. So here I am. And I was actually really calm until just right now. Now my heart's like, really close, got it. So I want to talk to the people who are not healthcare professionals, because most of you, well, I'm assuming most of you, are healthcare professionals of some sort in the room. And for those of you that are not, I am thrilled that you're here, because that's how I got started. My name is Susan Larson, and I live nearby. And I come from an agricultural background. I'm a homesteading, homeschooling, livestock producer. So that's my whole background. So yes, I have dabbled in the health. I've been interested in health my whole life. So I've always kind of been the oddball in my group of friends, you know, the health nut. And so, back in 2015 is when I kind of had a health crash. That was a wake-up call, because I considered myself pretty healthy. Of course, most of us did. And that sent me to discovering some health issues. Well, some prescription medication was prescribed, and it's like, I'm not that one who takes those things. So that's just sent me on this journey. At which point, all of 2016, I listened to every summit that I could think of online that I could find. And there this one lone voice that kept popping up and speaking on all these summits that just resonated, that made more sense to me than all the others. And that's how I am here now. And through a variety of programs that I started with, I ended up joining the NEPT program a year ago here at Shine. So for all of those of you who are not healthcare practitioners and might even be late in your life, it is not too late. It's never too late. We all have something important to say, and some of us are changing lives a lot of people at a time, and some of us are changing lives one at a time. And I've received so much support and encouragement to step out through this program. And I'm so blessed to be here, and I so honor and treasure Dr. Rita Marie for all the encouragement and her belief in me. It's gonna make me cry.
So, and the reason is, I've known her just as she came to my potlucks. We have these monthly potlucks, and people bring healthy food, and we talk, and she joined like one of our programs to help her with blood sugar, and she just always had great questions, like, wow, she's really smart. And then when I saw she was signed up for Shine, I'm like, does she realize this is a practitioner training? And she came, and the next thing I know, she's signing up. And what I've seen with her, because she's so motivated to help herself and educated herself, and some of you are like that, you want to help your family and yourself, you probably know more than most health practitioners. And she was like amazing. She started coming to every single call, and she started talking about she's helping this person and that. I have a new person with this and this person with that. And she's, I don't even know if she's charged anybody anything yet. She's just taking on people for free, right, to help them out, nieces and cousins and neighbors and all this. But all of us have been so impressed with her over the year that we have this program. I have a program that I do for a whole year called the Energy Recharge Inner Circle. We take people on who've had chronic health issues and haven't gotten results. We take them on for a whole year, and they get a variety of education and coaching and lab reading and all this. And one of the pieces is a small group, and we have a lead teacher and a leader and the apprentice, or somebody that's newer, to learn from them to then graduate to be the leader the next year. And out of all the people in the program, her name kept coming up, and we talked about it, and I said, I think she should do it. I think she should ask her. So now she is co-leading a group, a small group of like 6 people in our program, doing monthly coaching calls for these people, and they love it. And she's with Lynn, who's had 15 years of homeopathic experience in an RN, but is also new in our program, but coming in with so much background that she's another star, and we'll talk about her another time. But these 2 shining stars that are so amazing. And a year ago, if you would have told her that she was going to be leading one of my coaching groups, she would have laughed, right? She would have laughed. So I'm so impressed.
I laughed at Lynn when she asked me this summer. I'm like, no, you've got the wrong Susan.
We got the right Susan, girl. She has no idea. She's such a humble person. She comes from she doesn't even see her brilliance yet. And she's starting to, I think. And when she came in with her niece, right, it was your niece, you came in on a case. We have all these case study calls, and she came in and said, here's the case, and I went through this. And she did this amazing case presentation of all the questions she asked and all the things she did, and what do I do next? I'm like, whoa, you got it, girl. And I gave her a few little tips, and she ran with it. And the girl, after having, years of chronic digestive stuff, starting to get better. And it's so amazing, and it's so enlightening, because that's what we need this world to change, right? We need to change the health paradigm. We need to have a system where people get well and stay well, not just stay alive. Like, if you are given the choice of stay alive or have optimal wellness, who's going to choose staying alive? Right? You would choose just staying alive? No. You were scratching your head? She's like, yeah. So that's what we're here for. And I know that a lot of stuff that we've been doing is complicated. You know now more about SNPs than almost every other medical practitioner on the planet. Okay? Chet, would you agree with that? Is she in the room? Yeah. Oh, there you are. Would you agree with that? She's a medical doctor, been in practice for, 15 years? 15 years, okay? And then, where was Tamara? Tamara was over there earlier. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Where is she? She's an osteopathic medical doctor here in Round Rock, and she is a functional medicine. She's truly functional medicine, not the makeshift functional medicine that just says, instead of Ambien, we're going to give this herb and think that that's what's really solving the problem. That's not, right? So I appreciate you guys for being here and learning this. And don't feel bad if you don't have all these memorized. I don't have it all memorized, and I promise you I never will. But I can get a sense of knowing that there's certain genes that code for certain functions helps me as I'm talking to somebody go, I bet she has that gene. Let's go look, right? Let's go look it up and see. Or as you read the description of a gene, you go, I can think of 5 people I want to check for because I bet they have that gene. And you get to that point, and I can pick the GADs out, and I'm always right. I'm always right on picking out the GADs, the GADs, generalized anxiety disorder ones. I'm always right, right? And you'll get that way too. Go, I better check those neurotransmitter genes. I better check those digestion genes, et cetera. You're not going to be able to check every single gene on every single person, but you're going to go through their test and you're going to pick out all the reds. You're going to start with the reds. And you're going to look them up in these beautiful charts. A few of them you may not find in the beautiful charts, but soon they will all be in the beautiful charts. We're working on it. And then you'll be able to read about it. And if you want more, you'll be able to do a search on it and go to PubMed or wherever else to find out what's really what else going on with that gene. So you've already, right now, even though you might feel saturated, confused, whatever, you already have very useful information and very tools that you can go out and use right away and use your charts. They're on the site. You just have to download them. And I think the only ones not up are the 3 that we're going to do tomorrow or so. Okay? And digestion and blood sugar, which didn't get done. But I have these other charts, and the reason I left them for last was because I had these other charts for them, and you'll have them in the slides. Right, they're not as beautifully designed. If anybody wants to volunteer to put them in the format, I'll send you my template and you can do it. Anybody wants the template, I'll send you the template and you can put your genes in as you find them, only if you promise to share. So if anybody's up to that and wants that, we will send you the Word doc that's the template. And any genes you find, you can put in that template, but you got to share. Okay? Promise? You will share. Because we have to do this as a community. We have to do this and make this information the communal information, not just in my head, because I want to be better than the other practitioner. No, we need millions of practitioners who are better than the other practitioners, not just one. Nobody's in competition with each other. People say that to me all the time. Why do you teach health practitioners all your strategies and these things you've developed over 30 years? Aren't you afraid of competition? I'm like, I'm one. How the hell am I going to serve the billions of people out there that need it? No, I'm going to train as many of them as possible. I'm not keeping this as proprietary. That's why I do this program. I don't want to keep this in my head and have it leave the planet and when I hit 195 and I end up going. I would have said 250, but I looked at my genes again, and I'm like, it may be 195 instead. Just saying. All right. Who's ready to learn some detox snips? Okay, we have, I'm just going to do a review of detox. Who needs a review of detox or wants a review of detox? Yes? Who has it, like, memorized, you know, all the phases of stage one and two and all the nutrients needed for each one? Who knows that? Yeah. So we're going to review it. I always like the review. Liver is the major source of detoxification. There's also detoxification that happens in the gut and in the kidneys and in the skin, all these places. But the liver has the main one. The liver has a set of enzymes in it that will break down chemicals. Break them down. Toxic chemicals in the environment shouldn't hurt us as long as we don't exceed the liver's ability. Unfortunately, we're not born with a little stamp on us that says, your liver detoxification capacity is this, but yours is this. So we all should be careful about the toxins in the environment. And we know glyphosates in the food supply, right? The pesticides on the food, all the stuff that's who knows what, the hundreds and hundreds of chemicals that we're breathing in every day from exhaust fumes and the gasoline, and it's just all over the place. So the liver does that. The liver does these phase one and phase two. And we'll talk about a little bit more about that. So just so that when I look at the SNPs, you get it. Phase one is easy, relatively easy. Phase one usually goes pretty quickly. It doesn't usually get too far backed up, but there are SNPs that will back it up somewhat. So sometimes the problem is phase one is faster than phase two, and we get a buildup of toxic intermediates. And I'll show you a very memorable picture of what that's about. So the liver just does this chemical thing, and it dumps the neutralized, less toxic, water-soluble wastes, fat-soluble wastes out into the bile, okay? The water solubles will usually get reabsorbed and then put into the bloodstream around to the kidneys so the kidneys can filter it out. The fat solubles go out in the poop, right? So if the person's constipated, guess what? Recycle, 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 okay? So that's a general what it's like. There's phase one and phase two. We're gonna memorize this and we're gonna have a test on it tomorrow. Okay? Why do they always laugh at me when I say that? Lordy. Oh. Anyway, so we have phase one and phase two. This tells you what the different toxins are and where they're resolved. What I wanted really to see is phase one and then toxic intermediates. Toxic. They're usually toxic because they're not meant to be sitting there for very long. It's like phase one, phase two. It's like walking through the door. I walk through this door and I'm out here. Oh, there's a hallway in between. Very short hallway. Now I'm in the second door. Now I'm in phase two. So I'm in phase one. I step through into the hallway. I'm in phase two. That's how quick it should go, right? But what happens is, where am I going to go in there? There's no room in there. Is there space for me? I'm skinny, okay? Where can I go? Meanwhile, I'm sitting here, and I'm spewing out fumes, right? I'm putting back in the bloodstream toxic stuff because, or the toxins themselves. I'm oversimplifying this, by the way. So anybody who's really, you know, just forgive me for it. But I'm sitting here and I can't get in there. And suddenly, there's a helicopter and it comes by and it swoops me up and throws me in the bloodstream. Then I can get to the brain. Ooh, I'm happy now. I don't have to go in that darn liver. I could go in the brain. That's really cool. Then I can make this person brain fogged. Anyway, that's phase one and phase two. I'll give you a better example of that in a minute. So on this side, what's important here is seeing, and I know I can't point it there and I can't see it there, it's angles, but there's five, six main stages of phase two. Phase two is more complicated and it's selective. Phase one is everybody goes through the same process. So now I walk into phase two and there's five rooms, five routes, six routes that I can go to. Methylation, hormones, neurotransmitters, some heavy metals, glutathione conjugation, lots of stuff. I'm not going to go into that. We don't have time. It's all in the chart. Phase three, or I don't remember. I don't have it memorized which ones go to which one. I have a chart that I look at. So I see toxic buildups of things. I know, oh, it looks like it's glucuronidation. It looks like it's glutathione conjugation. So we have methylation. I'll say acetylation because that's the NAT 1 and 2s we're going to look at later. And that is a lot of drugs, a lot of prescription drugs. They go through the acetylation. So methylation, acetylation, glutathione conjugation, glucuronidation, sulfur. Those are the five we're going to look at in terms of some of the nutritional pieces and the genes. Got it? Five different pathways that phase two offers. Phase one, it says speed up and slow down. Guess what? There's times when we want to slow it down if phase two is backed up. So if they have poor methylation, poor acetylation, poor glutathione conjugation, not enough glutathione, poor glucuronidation, poor sulfur, they can't go through it fast enough. Sometimes we want to give this person something to slow down. So vitamin C, the B vitamins, glutathione, bioflavonoids, NAC, magnesium, selenium, iron, choline, and what's the last one say? I can't even see it. Cysteine. Okay, we get them all over there. So if we really want to speed up phase one, those are some of the things that do it. But if somebody's in this backup and we want to slow down phase two, phase one, there's other things. Grapefruit, here's the thing. There were some studies and some people had really poor reactions to prescription drugs, like overdoses of prescription drugs on very low doses because they were drinking a lot of grapefruit juice. And the grapefruit juice has a chemical in it that slows down phase one. And so they were getting this buildup of their ulcer medication. And, you know, there's toxins and there's side effects of every medication, right? So that turmeric. Turmeric's a good one because it slowed down phase one and speeds up phase two. So if somebody's like standing here trying to get through, right, we can slow that down so we don't get too much built up. And then we could speed that up so now there's room for me. Make sense? Okay. I'm being silly, but I think it'll help you learn. Capsaicin, clove oil, quercetin, calendula. This is not the be-all and the end-all list, but these are things to keep in mind. This is what happens when phase two gets backed up. Who remembers I Love Lucy? Who remembers the chocolate factory scene? Okay? A lot. This is an easy job. Wrap them up. That's the liver, right? That's the liver. Wrapping them up. Everything's good. But suddenly, toxic big buildup. You're out and you're breathing in gasoline fumes. You're stressed out. You've got all this stuff. And then suddenly it's faster. And they handled it. They handled it. They handled it. And then stick it in their mouth. Stick it in the pocket. That's what the liver does. So if you ever have working with someone who has this really not high calorie diet, right? They're just eating the right amount of calories you would think. Or they try to lose weight, and suddenly they can't lose weight, and they're gaining weight. Why? Because where the mouth, Lucy and Ethel stuck it in their mouth or in their pockets, the liver sticks it in fat. It covers it in fat to protect the rest of the body from having a problem there. Does this make sense? And so, oh my God, so they do that, and now they're fat. And then here's what happens. If they don't clean up the liver and support this, and especially if they have the SNPs that will tend to slow this down, and then they try to lose that extra fat, who's had this happen? Every time they try to lose weight, they get sick. They get headaches. They get muscle aches. They get joint aches. Everybody ever experienced that with someone? Or if you haven't, you just haven't worked with enough people because it happens all the time, right? they start to lose weight, and instead of losing the weight, well, they lose weight a little bit, and then their body starts to put it back on because they felt crappy. No difference in calories because of this, because of this. So we're going to talk about SNPs related to detoxification. We've got a sheet that's 2 pages long. Is it 2 pages or is it 3? I think it's one front and back, though. Phase one? No, phase one should be 3. 3 pages. So it's 2 pages stapled together, front and back, and then, so 3 pages of phase one. And I'm going to get this, and we're going to go through some of these. We're not going to go through every one, but there are some critical ones that I want you to know. So when I do group interpretations, who's been on one of those group gene interpretation calls with me? Anybody here? I think a lot of you have, because we do them a lot on NEPT calls, but also that year, the thing we did with ERC, where it was a whole day. You were on that, Lynn. Where it was a whole day of me interpreting person after person after person after person. I don't recommend you do this at home. I don't recommend you do this until you've had a lot of experience with it, because if you don't, you're not going to ask the right questions to really help them. You're going to say, you should avoid this. You should. Some of these are easy. These are easy. You also have, in addition to this chart, you have this other chart in on the website that looks kind of like, well, here it is. And there's one for detox and one for methylation. Looks like this. And it just gives you all the text. So if you like to read, great. If you like to just look at bullet points, this is the one. So it's pretty much the same information. This has a little bit more words. It's on your page. And you can look up, and this is set up to, well, this is actually set up as a genetic genie interpretation. So it's exact order, the exact ones that are on genetic genie. So if the person says, I don't want to spend any more money, I just spent $200 on getting the gene test, you send them to geneticgenie.org, they download their data, they at least get a starting point. And you can do tremendous amount with just knowing this stuff, right? And so you've got the list in here. And I used this to create that. All right, so we're in detoxification. I'm just going to quickly mention some of these things, and you can make notes if you want to, on like the CYP1A1. That this detoxifies polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. Shout out if you know what those are. I said shout, not whisper. Charbroiled meats, right. Gas fumes, I think I heard, right? Gasoline fumes. So when people have a SNP here, especially if it's a homozygous too, right, just really warn them, if you're going to eat meat, don't put it on the barbecue, right? Don't put it on the barbecue. Because on top of the pesticides and the herbicides, if it's not organic, you're going to get the polycyclic aromatics, and these are deadly. Some people say they're more dangerous than cigarette smoke. I don't know. I haven't seen that as a particular, but it's very dangerous, okay? Especially if you have the SNP. Also the gas. So I mentioned this earlier. Park your car in the garage. If it's attached to your house, leave the garage door open 20 minutes. Let the fumes air out and then close your garage. Otherwise, those fumes will seep under. And some people, you know, do you have any friends or people you know or yourself where you go to the gas station to pump gas and you can't do it yourself? You have to sit in the car when somebody else does it or with the windows closed or go inside the store. Who's ever known anybody like that? Oh, no? Wow. Where do you guys live? That's so common. Ask that question when you're talking to a client for the first time, especially if they have symptoms that are like they can't lose weight, their brain foggy, and they have detox type symptoms, you know, achy headaches. Ask them, do you ever feel worse when you're pumping your own gas? Do you feel worse when you're like, if somebody's got the car on in the garage and they didn't drive away yet and they've got it on? My husband does that all the time. It drives me nuts. Do you feel worse? Do you have symptoms? Are you sensitive to that? That's an indication, okay? So then CYP1A, oh, and that, you know, it will predispose because it also metabolizes estrogen. And we'll look at a chart later real quickly about the metabolism of estrogen. The breakdown products are toxic, some of them. 4-hydroxy, 16-hydroxy, and 2-hydroxy. 2 is more protective. The other 2 are more toxic. 4 is the most toxic. And this part of the liver breaks it down. So if somebody has a problem with estrogenic symptoms or hot flashes or things, they could be having a problem because that enzyme isn't working properly. CYP1A2 is responsible for the estrogen as well as caffeine metabolism. But the thing about this, remember we talked up or down, the tortoise or the hare, slow or fast? In this particular case, if they're a fast metabolizer of caffeine, then the caffeine comes and goes, they don't care, they can drink coffee all the way up to bed. But the slow metabolizers are going to have that lingering, they only need a little bit, they have that lingering issue with it. Those are the ones that we want to get off of caffeine because it also shares the pathway with this estrogen metabolism. And we don't want to tax that pathway with handling caffeine and take it away from handling these estrogens and getting rid of these 4-hydroxyestrogens, which would be dangerous and hurt these little guys up here and any hormone-sensitive tissue, the breasts especially, but uterus as well. CYP1B1, again, helps to detoxify estrogen. So these first three, if you're working with somebody who has a history of breast cancer, I'd be curious with folks in the room who've had breast cancer or know people with breast cancer to look at these and see if you've got backups here. These aren't the only ones. COMT is involved with it too. So there's a lot, and we have a whole chart on cancer SNPs as well. So people who have fibroids, breast cancer, fibrocystic breasts, look at this, reduce some of the toxins, right? And follow the rules over here. There's a lot of check marks here because there's a lot of the avoids in these in particular, right? A lot of them don't have a lot of avoids. These have a lot of avoids. The CYP2A6 detoxifies nicotine and nitrosamines. So some of the processed meats, nitrosamines. Nicotine, obviously, we know, people who smoke or do a pipe or, you know, even the e-cigs are found to be problematic, even though they don't have caffeine in them. Some of them have a small amount, but that it seems to be, this is just preliminary studies, that whatever's in those e-cigs, the chemicals in there that are going into the lungs, those actually use a similar pathway for detoxification, so can cause a problem there. So cancer, especially lung, right? Because we know we associate nicotine with lung cancer. CYP2C9, here we're getting into the druggies, right? So there's a whole bunch of drugs that are associated with each of these. And you can go to SNPpedia and get the list, and I have a link in here. But basically, when you can't metabolize certain drugs, you're going to have a reaction. Those of you who are nurses or doctors in the room have seen bad reactions to certain drugs in just some people and not others, right? Knowing their genetics before drugs are dispensed. There's actually a company, I met the woman, I spoke on the stage with her right after her at a conference recently, and her company does a specific report on just the SNPs all related to the drugs. So a doctor can use this report in prescribing, and they even give what alternative drugs this person should be getting if they need a specific function, right? It's not the same as what we're doing functionally, trying to get their real obstacles out of the way, but in the medical system, it's a big improvement, right, in how drugs are dispensed. Same thing like we talked about with autism, like every parent should check their kids' SNPs before vaccinating them. If they're really hot on vaccinating them, check them, right? Don't just shoot them up at birth and then have a kid that is permanently damaged. It's a very small percentage that actually get damaged, but if we were to look at that, Amy Yasko did a lot of that. If you look at the ones that she sees, she had this certain pathways that are blocked in them, and you can open it up. All right, so some of the others that are related to drugs, 2C19, Coumadin, proton pump inhibitors, Prilosec, these are things that people are on commonly, right, when they come in. So it's super important when you do a history with these folks to ask them what medications they're on and have them listed, and you go look those up as to what are side effects and what are interactions even with herbs and foods so that you can be the educated practitioner that does this. CYP2D6 metabolizes 25% of all meds, including tricyclics and other meds that affect brain chemistry. And who's ever known anybody or have had a bad reaction to taking Prozac or an MAO inhibitor or any of that? Have you seen that? I know people go, no, I can't do that. That's too bad. They probably have this SNP or an impairment in this pathway in any case. But 2D6 isn't genotyped anymore? Darn. 2E1. 2E1 metabolizes ethanol. Acetone, who here likes to paint their fingernails? Has anybody ever come up with a non-toxic way to get it off? I don't think the polishes are that bad because they've come up with non-toxic polishes, but you just got to let it chip off, because if you want to take it off, you have to use acetone. Acetone's horrific for the body, and in particular to people who have the 2E1, right? What else? And then 3A4. 3A4 is the breakdown of over 50%, including steroids. So if somebody's on hormone replacement therapy, and they are, some of them are on too much because the doctors just randomly shoot it out there without checking. They just put them on and then a year later check them again, right? If you're on too much of this, you're overtaxing that pathway. And when you overtax that pathway, it takes away from the work that that can, body can do in other things that are detoxified there. So steroids and the breakdown of organophosphate insecticides. So if somebody's eating commercial food and they're on hormone replacement, they're really super taxing this pathway. And then add to that, if they have a SNP there, probably going to get some buildup and some toxic effects. Is that affected by hormone-sensitive cancers? It might be. Right? We don't know all the answers, but what I want you to guys to learn is how to extrapolate what you know about the biochemistry and the way the body works with what you know about how the body detoxifies and how these chemicals work in the body. And yeah, I mean, it's one thing for me to be pie in the sky and say, just get people to eat 100% organic food and get off of this and exercise and do all the right things. But they're not doing it, and we have to work with them to get them there. And I believe, yes, we have to work with them slow. Yes, we have to work with them one step at a time. Yes, we give them bite-sized pieces that they could do. But if they come in with cancer or an autoimmune disease, you owe it to them to tell them everything you know and say, look, I'll work with you slowly if you want. We'll work with this. You've got to get off of this stuff. It's dangerous. But you owe it to them to say that up front, as opposed to just, well, this week we're going to get rid of gluten. And next week, we're going to have you meditate. And next week, and then they may die before you get through all the 47,000 steps you want them to go through. You owe it to them to let them choose how fast or slow. And then you give them, what's the downside of going slow? What's the downside of going fast? Does that make sense? Yes? I'm really strong about this. You don't have these. They were, oh, the detox. You got that yesterday. So look to see if there's detox phase 1 and 2, because when Scott gave phase 2, detoxification, glutathione, and B9, Scott said that one. Oh, you got that one? They gave you that one? Oh, yay! Because last night I had to print them out on my computer on these little flimsy papers because I couldn't find them. Good. Yay. So phase 2 detoxification. I only put in 2. How would I say there were 5? Again, ran out of time. I have some slides that I'll show you some other things. But that's what we're working on. We're going to work on getting the rest of these done. And if anybody wants a job for a while getting them done, come ask me and we'll hire you. Phase 2 detoxification. I'll start with glutathione first. And then we'll go to methylation. Glutathione, it's 2 pages, front and back. And glutathione is a critical enzyme in the sulfur pathway. Let me see if I have that picture. I probably do, because I finished phase 1. I just gave you a list. You'll have them in the slides of all the nutrients that are needed. Does this mean that you're going to hand somebody 12 bottles of supplements and say, here, you got to fix your detox? Right? That ain't the right approach, right? Reduce the toxic load, give them the key nutrients you think they're not getting in their food, and work with them there. So these are the nutrients that are required. It's pretty much everyone. And then the what to do, if I can get it to stop there. Norm, help! Can you make it stop on the next slide? No, the previous slide than this. There we go. Thank you. So obviously, the first step, if you're trying to fix a detox pathway or you're trying to compensate for a compromised detox pathway, is reduce the toxic load. Don't sit there having them loaded up and then give them all the nutrients to compensate for it, because that's what we want in life, don't we? We want to be able to abuse ourselves and then take a pill that takes away the... Who would love that if that was the way our world lived? Have as much decadent fun and food as you wanted, and all you had to do was take the morning after pill. right? The morning after pill, we'll call it that, okay? But that's not the reality of life, okay? We've got to look at that. So reducing the toxic load is critical. Support methylation, support, avoid foods that interfere with detoxification, recommend herbs and supplements to compensate for that. Reduce stress, of course, improve their digestion, provide education is super important. That's a big piece of what we do. And this is why I ended up doing a lot of online programs, because guess what? When I was doing a lot of one-on-one, I'd be saying the same thing over and over again and over and over again. And after a while, when you have to say the same thing over and over again, you forget that that person didn't hear you the last 20 times, and you leave stuff out. You're not as effective, right? Record it. It's so easy today. When I first started doing it, it was a pain. Right now, you can get a free Zoom account and record 15-minute recordings, get an MP4, download it, send them a link to it, or send it them straight to Zoom. You don't even have to have a website to do this, right? You can create content so easily. So anything that you think you're going to say over and over, like, water is important, here's why, right? Let's do an oil change was my favorite, right? I call it an oil change where swapping out the oxidized processed oils that are no good for you for the good ones, right? So whatever you're saying over and over, make a note of it and find a way to do it. Zoom is real easy because you can get a free account and you can do it. You can do it in more sophisticated stuff. You can get Camtasia and do screenshot videos. But you can do a screenshot video in Zoom. Like, all you have to do is get PowerPoint or the free version, or you don't even need PowerPoint. Just go on to Google Docs. It's free. Google presentation or something. And you just put your presentation up there and you play it and you talk it with your voice. You don't want to do your hair that day. You don't want to get dressed that day. No biggie. You don't show yourself. Turn your camera off. And you can create these great presentations and educational. Make them short. Get them out to people in your community. Do talks, educate people. There's a lot of ways to educate people, and that's really critical for what we're doing. And then if they need it, you supplement. And now it's going fast again. Okay, so these are the five that I told you that we have, we want to look at. And there's glutathione, acetylation, glucuronidation, sulfation, and methylation. We were just looking at glutathione. Oh, Manny. All right. This is the detoxification glutathione. Okay. So there's a whole bunch of them here. They all start with GS. Did you notice that? Or just about all of them start with glutathione. There's glutathione synthase, which makes glutathione. There's glutathione receptors. There's glutathione breakdowns. But the bottom line of all of these, you'll see that the suggestions are all the same across. If they have any of the glutathione problem SNPs, you're going to want to support the glutathione pathway, reduce the toxic load, get rid of the oxidized fats, provide precursors, sulfur-rich foods. Right? And you may say, some people can't eat sulfur-rich foods. They get sick from sulfur-rich foods. If they get sick from sulfur-rich foods, it's because they have a problem in the pathway and it's backed up. And so you go slow and you open up those pathways. You see what other nutrients there are. Molybdenum, super important. And I'll show you a picture in that big picture where that goes. B6 is super important for getting in that pathway. Cysteine and acetylcysteine, things like that. And you could do glutathione, but know that don't just go to CVS and buy glutathione if they have it, because it won't get absorbed. Glutathione is picky. It's very picky, very slow to absorb. So you want to get liposomal glutathione. You can get topical glutathione, right? You can get the precursors to glutathione, like NAC. But don't just give them glutathione and expect them to get better. They can get an IV of glutathione. And it can be important, but you know what happens if you give somebody an IV and they're slow detoxifying and they have, you know, problems here, they can end up with problems from getting the IV. They feel bad. Most people feel phenomenal after it, but you got to be careful who you send to get those things. Okay, so there's the GSR, the GSS. These should all be there. Are these on the reports? Yes, and these are on most of these. Some of these are not. Some of these are on your GSS is not, okay. GSS, GSTM1 is on your genetic genie. And they're all different pieces of the pathway, and I'll show you the pathway again. But they're different pieces in the pathway of creating glutathione or breaking it down, right? If you have a breakdown enzyme and it breaks it down too fast, you're not going to have enough glutathione in the system. If you have a slowed down creation synthesis enzyme, you're not going to be able to do it that way because you're not making enough. So there are times to support glutathione, for sure. Very important. Make sense? Like it? Good. That's glutathione. This one is methylation B9, folate. I have a bunch of stuff to say about folate. So what I wanted to show you is this chart. This is Ben Lynch, his pathway planner. He sells a set of these where he breaks down individual places. And if you look closely, it's hard for me to see. Whoops. Did they turn that off? Can you put the slide back up? This pathway, when we put, see? This is Ben Lynch's pathway planner. And you can buy it, Seeking Health. Go to Seeking Health. They're not cheap. It's like $150 to get the digital versions, I don't remember which ones you get. But there's a bunch of different ones you can print out, but you can get them in big laminated charts if you're really into this and you want to put them on your wall. What? Or abstract art, yeah. You don't want to do wallpaper. Just get a bunch of these and pin them to the wall. Instead of the Beatles posters in your kid's room, that's what my kid puts on his wall. I actually have this, and I had it up for a while, and people would come in and go, okay. I knew you were weird. So up here, I'm not at an angle where I could Lordy, I hit the wrong button. Okay. Oh, man, I can't make the thing go. Is it the middle? Am I there? What's that one say? All right. Whew. In the middle there, you'll see where MTHFR is down at the bottom. You see that one? You can't read it. Okay, good. You'll go online and you'll get this. I have a closer up version of it, but I wanted to show you where the sulfation is. There. Okay. So the green one is the methylation, and that's the folic acid cycle, folate cycle, okay? So bottom of that is your MTHFR. Along the way, you'll see the MTHF01L, the MTHFS1, you'll see the MTHFD1, all in that side. So it's not just MTHFR that can be problematic in slowing this down. It's some of these others, which are intermediate steps. Up at the top is where the folate comes in, whether it's from food or from supplement. And if you have problems with the folate receptors, FOLR is what they're called, what their SNP is. I'll show you, I left that chart out. We'll get to that chart because we ran out of space, time, whatever. Anyway, over here, then it comes around in the hot potato. Folate is the recipient of the hot potato. It gets passed down that hole, the recycling happens, and at the bottom, a potato gets added on. The folate goes hot, sends it off to B12 over here. And then B12 becomes methylated and sends the methyl group up to methionine at the top. Methionine then methylates it and sends it off to acetyl methionine. Okay, acetyl methionine is one of the key, SAMe is one of the key methyl donors. And it passes it in onto the other side of the pathway into some of those neurotransmitter places with the COMT and everything. A little more complicated than you need to know right now. But what you need to know here is if somebody has SNPs in any of these on this page, that folate is an issue. They need methylated folate, not folic acid. Repeat that, not folic acid, no synthetic folic acid, because what that does is it binds the receptor sites and blocks out the methylated folate. And then we get into trouble. It also blocks the uptake of folate at the brain barrier, blood-brain barrier. We get into trouble. So one thing you can do, simple, when people come in, is take a look at all their supplements that they're taking and tell them to stop any of them that have synthetic folate in it. If it says folic acid, it's synthetic folate. It's a synthetic. If it says folate, but it doesn't say L-methyl tetrahydrofolate, then you're not necessarily sure. I know these guys, Premier, who's outside, all of theirs are activated and methylated. But some of the companies not, and some of them don't market that way. We had a donor who was going to donate a really nice detox package, and we looked at it and it had folic acid in it. So I contacted him. I said, I can't teach people not to use folic acid and give your prize as a goodie bag prize. I'd be out of integrity here. He goes, we're working on it, we're working on it. So there's still some companies who haven't, they're good companies because it was a very impeccable company otherwise, and they're going to work on it, but they need to be educated. The supplement companies need to be educated too. Okay? Clear? B9? Okay. So what I want to do is show you in the slides a couple of others, and oh, Lordy. Okay, so potential problems. The folic acid synthetic blocks the folate receptors. So does excess folic acid can be problems, lead to problems as cancer. So if somebody's taking the folic acid synthetic, increased risk of cancer, and then dairy can block these folate receptors too. So a lot of people are like, dairy's good, dairy's bad, dairy's good, dairy's bad. I personally think dairy's good if you're a baby cow. If not, or a baby goat, that would be goat milk. If not, it's probably not good. Now, there may be some nutrients in there that because of problems with however your body's working, you're not able to utilize or find those nutrients in other sources. And then maybe, you know, fermented kefir, whatever form of the dairy would be good. But it does block the folate receptor, so you do need to be careful. Okay, whoops, that went too fast. Okay. Conditions associated with MTHFR SNPs. I'm just going to summarize these with one word. Can I summarize the SNP, the problems that you could have with an activated MTHFR? Everything. Anything. Like, look at the list, right? So anytime somebody comes in with these symptoms, I mean, recurrent miscarriage is one. That's very frequently overlooked. And guess what? What are they giving pregnant women? Folic acid. Folic acid. Right? So pretty much anything. So anything can cause it because it's such a critical, you know, pivot point in the cycle. That's the synthetic versus the non-synthetic. There's just a tiny, tiny difference chemically, if you care. We can't use folic acid. We have to use the oh, good. Whoops. And then, oh, Manny. Why is this not working well? Supplemental forms, okay? You want to get quality forms. L-methyltetrahydrofolate, tetrahydrofolate, quatrafolate, metafolin, that's kind of a brand name. It might be prescription, I'm not sure. Calcium form. L-methylfolate, 6S5-methylfolate. These are forms, if they say it on the label, you're good. If it doesn't say one of these, question it, call the manufacturer, find out, okay? And then research it up the wazoo, tell them to show you some studies that say they're not lying. Oh, yeah, don't get into that right now. But here's the thing. It could be, very much could be, and it could be good because it actually helps with some of the problems that happen when we give someone too much of the folate and they have a COM-T activated. The SAMe bypasses that. But you can get in trouble with too much SAMe. And again, anytime you step into a cycle and give something, you have to think about, well, what's the process behind it? What about the negative feedback loop, right? That says, oh, we have enough. Woo, we have enough. Competitive inhibition. Okay? So, yeah, that's a good point. And we have to just individually look at that to see what their other SNPs are and go slowly with it. But, yeah, SAMe could be very, very fine. So factors that disrupt methylation. I'm going to sum this up in a word. Anybody know what the word is?
Everything.
Everything, pretty much. Okay. So there's, you know, there's toxins, there's drugs, there's environmental stuff, there's stress. All of that stuff affects it. So we really just have to look at that. Other methylation SNPs that are not specifically here that we've talked about in other places. COM-T, we talked about that. VDR, we talked about that in the vitamin minerals. Remember back yesterday? That was a long time ago. We had that chart of vitamin minerals, vitamin D receptor, MAO, which is no longer in the 23andMe report, but that's another story. Then we have AHCY, which is an adenosyl, and it's right after SAMe. So if I like draw the picture and I see pictures in my brain, I'm kind of weird. I see my pathways that way for fatty acids, and I just see it, and I just kind of see the chemicals going along. So I'm going to draw it this way. If it's a, I'm going to do it this way, just so that it's simple, because I have the picture there, but here's the simple version. Right here is B12, and the SNPs are MTRR. Write these down, and I'll tell you what they are. MTR, and they're involved in the conversion here. Methionine, SAMe, and the AHCY is somewhere in here. And then there's the big bugger down here. Anyone guess? Okay, so homocysteine. We want to get the homocysteine down. But if we don't have enough methylation going on, we can't get it around here. The homocysteine builds up. So the homocysteine goes up and around here. We add a methyl group from B12. We go around to methionine. We go to SAMe, and then it's out. So we want to keep that homocysteine, which is a blood test, in the range of, like, I like to keep it 4 to 6. Right? The lab tests will say 8 or 10 is okay. I just like to see it 4 to 6. And if it's higher than that, then I want to boost this pathway. But then it can't be too low. It can't be too low, because now we're getting into our sulfation circle with glutathione. You can tell why I don't use flip charts very often. I can't write. But this is why, you know, too much, not enough, et cetera. We want to be careful. If we have too little homocysteine, there's not enough to be down here, B6. Is important there. So if somebody has a backup of B6, right, a lot of people do. We add a lot of that when we're working on hormones. B6 is important to get it down in here. And then this is called the sulfation, the transsulfation. The end result is glutathione, comes out here as cysteine, sulfate. Sulfate and sulfites. Folks who have problems in this pathway are much more sensitive to, like, those sulfated dried fruits that look all pretty, that have been had sulfates to them. That's where some people have real bad sulfate sensitivity. But we're not going to go into that pathway in detail. You can go to Ben Lynch's site and take that from him. I want to give you practical information. And besides, I could spend 3 hours explaining that. We don't have that. I want to give you practical information. You can take home the general overview. Make sense? Yes? But here's the thing. Because of this negative inhibition, if we have too much glutathione, it's going to cause a backup back here. So if we take too much, you go in for IVs once a week, you're taking large doses, there could be a backup here, which could cause an increase in some of these chemicals here that go to sulfite and sulfates, which could cause toxicity. So some of these folks who have sulfur sensitivity, they can't eat garlic and onions and all, be careful about supplementing glutathione with them. Make sense? Because we can end up with a backup, and then they're not going to be able to handle it. And they'll get those sensitivity reactions. Say it again. I start low and slow and build up. The minimum effective dose, start with a little bit. Don't start with an IV. I don't remember the exact dosage. I look at the bottle and I go, okay. I get it in liposomal form. And I look to see how much each teaspoon will have. I start the person with a couple of drops. They do okay. They don't have any weird symptoms. I build it up. That's the stuff where you just have to titrate based on how they're doing and how they're feeling. Too many people do capsules. You can't control the amount, right? If somebody takes a capsule, they've got 500 milligrams and that's it. Right, you can open it, sure. But so I do liposomal, the liquids. detox symptoms. Like when somebody says, oh, I got a detox headache. Oh, I have this achiness, right? I just feel spacey. Ammonia builds up. Spaciness. Yeah. Yeah. Good question. So we just want to be careful about this, especially if they have SNPs. The sulfur, we have a picture of the sulfur ones in a bit. It's really CBS is the main one, and there's another one called SULT 1, 2, or 3. I'll leave that there. My artwork, isn't it lovely? I actually am pretty artistic. I can paint. I just can't draw. So there's another summary of the methylation cycle. This is here for reference only. We're not going to go through every piece of this again. We could be there for a couple of hours. But it gives you an idea of what some of the cofactors are at different places. We didn't get there yet. Oh, CBS is in that picture. Oh, Lordy. Why is this happening? I hit it once and it goes back three slides. Is there a way to change the sensitivity on this? Okay, it's back. Hold it there. Not touch it. CBS is at the bottom here. Is it listed here? Where you see where homocysteine is? CBS is the enzyme that takes it down from there. So in my picture, right here, to take homocysteine down is CBS. And it's B6 is required. Make sense? On the form? On that? It's not in the detoxification. Look up sulfation. No, I don't know if it was. That's what Lynn, did we ever find it there? We were looking and going, where's CBS? Where's CBS on that report? Okay, great. So it's more like before they have the actuals there. Okay, good. Now, what you'll find is if you're really looking for stuff that you want to see complete lists, the MTHFR support, the 49-pager, has a lot of things repeated over and over in all the places that they belong. So it can make it easier that way, but that report can be overwhelming. Not one I recommend you just give to a client. So we're also looking at BHMT as the shortcut through the middle. So say this is blocked. Say this person has red SNPs here, an MTR and MTRR. We can take a shortcut through the middle. BHMT. Okay? That requires betaine, and it takes homocysteine and betaine and goes up to methionine. I've had people, I'll tell you a little bit about her. She had homozygous red SNPs here, MTR, MTRR, and BHMT. She couldn't methylate. She couldn't methylate, right? And so every time she tried to lose weight, she'd release toxins. She was heavy. She'd release toxins from her fat. And guess what? She had really bad symptoms. And if for her, it wasn't just achiness or a headache, which she could tolerate. It was neurologic symptoms. Sometimes it was like MS-type symptoms, where she couldn't speak. She garbled her speech. She was wobbly. And then she's like, I don't want this weight. But every time I start to lose it, I can't function. You're going to see people like that. And it's a challenge. That's a challenging one. So blood markers, because we said, you know, you want to know what blood to take for all the methylation backups. So homocysteine, obviously, it can get elevated, usually in this MTHFR C677T, that one. The 1298 doesn't always do it, but the C677T will generally result there if it's activated. My homocysteine is normal. So even though I have two heterozygous, people who have the homozygous are more likely to see an elevation of homocysteine. You can look at that. MCV, mean corpuscular volume. It's on the CBC, the red cell size. They get big when they're folate and B12 deficient. Methylmalonic acid is the gold standard in the urine for B12 because it's another pathway where B12 is required to take methylmalonic acid, which is a neurotoxin, down and metabolize it. So if there's a buildup there, person's having a B12 deficiency, almost 100%. I always say almost because there's no such thing as 100% on anything, really. Probably 99.99%, okay? Now, if they have this buildup of methylmalonic acid, it can cause neurologic symptoms. So we know B12, when you look up B12, yes, it causes megaloblastic anemia, but some of the irreversible symptoms sometimes of B12 problems is neurologic symptoms, tingling in, they call it stocking and glove paresthesia, and other kinds of neurologic stuff. It can cause things that mimic schizophrenia. There's a book called Could It Be B12? And so people who are experiencing some severe neurologic or psychologic or psychiatric issues, check their B12, but don't do a serum B12. It's really not good. And in fact, most people with methylation issues have elevated serum B12 because it's in the serum, it can't get activated, it doesn't get in the tissues. So people say, my doctor said I have to stop taking B12 because my B12 is 1700 and the range is like, I don't know, 350 to 1000 or something. And I'll say, but your MCV is still elevated, your homocysteine is still elevated, and your methylmalonic acid is elevated. You can get the methylmalonic acid through a company called, Norman Labs. That's the one that I think is most accurate. Norman, N-O-R-M-A-N. But you can also get it, because Norman Labs charges like $150 for that. You can do a Dutch test or an OAT test, organic acid test, and they include methylmalonic acid. So instead of $175, you can spend an extra $100 and get a Dutch test, or an extra $100 and get an organic acid test, and then you have a bigger picture of the process that's going on.
If that's elevated, you have a B12 deficiency.
Yes. If it's elevated, you have a B12 deficiency. Exactly. Exactly. Right? So this is important to know. Normal serum B12 is not a good test. Now, if the serum B12 is low, you can assume a deficiency. But if it's normal or high, you can't assume adequacy. Does that make sense? Make sense? Can we hold the question to the end? Okay, thank you. I'm almost done. What to do for methylation SNPs? Okay. Again, we want to balance some of these things. You want to balance the folate, the foundational lifestyle principles. We're going to see this on all of them. We've got to get them sleeping. We've got to get them de-stressed. We've got to have them drinking water. We've got to get them on a clean diet, good fats, etc. We'll talk about more of the foundational stuff tomorrow because that's where you have to start with all of these. This for that approach, like the Amy Asco report that I have, it didn't ask me anything about my foundational lifestyle stuff. It just said, take these 18 supplements three times a day at a cost of $500 a month. Do I really want to do that? I feel fine. My SNPs are not my reality because I've got the foundational lifestyle stuff in place. Make sense? You know, improve the B12, get rid of the synthetic folic acid, test the homocysteine levels, make sure they're good, reduce oxidative stress, test thyroid because thyroid's critical as well, especially in relation to the B vitamins, and educate, supplement if needed. And usually you do want to supplement these people, at least temporarily. I take B12. I have double heterozygous B, MTHFR. I've got an B, MTR and MTRR related to the B12. And I have homozygous on those. And I have a couple of other things. I think I have some BHMTs, I forget. But I don't take folate very often. Why? I eat a great diet. I eat tons of greens. Does anybody watch me eat? I eat pounds of greens every day, raw, uncooked leafy greens with plenty of folate. So I don't really feel like I need to take it. With B12, I probably need to take it a little more often, but I did an experiment once for a year, and I didn't take any B vitamins for a whole year, and I went in and got tested. And I got the methylmalonic acid tested, and it was fine. I was fine. My son was going to go through puberty, and I said, is this puberty or is this pathology? Right? Has anybody ever had kids go through puberty and go, is this normal puberty or is this pathology? Because you don't know sometimes, right? And I was looking at this list of symptoms, and I was reading that book, the Could It Be B12, and I just said to him, honey, do you have any of these other symptoms on here? He goes, yeah, all of them. And some of them were like hearing voices. Right? He said to me when I got a B12 patch, I finally got him to do the test, his levels were elevated. The range is below 3.2 and has risen in the 5 range, so almost double the upper limit. And I said, this is serious, honey. This could be permanent neurologic damage. So he got him a patch. He wore the patch. 2 hours later, he comes to me and says, Mommy, can that work that quickly? I said, what do you mean? He goes, all the voices in my head are gone. What does a mother feel when she hears her kid say she has they had voices in their head, right? Oh, yeah, he was reading books and has at 13. He was going and getting books at the bookstore, an autobiography of a schizophrenic. The psychopath next door, he was trying to figure himself out. Why am I having these weird things? So he started taking the B12. It changed our lives, right? He needed it. Yeah, it can be pretty serious, and it needs to be caught because it can go permanent. And I think he does have a little bit of permanent damage, because every time he doesn't take it for a little bit, the first indication, and I ignored it, was when he was about 5, and he said, "Mommy, why do my feet go numb when I'm sitting on the toilet for too long?" First of all, I want to know why you're sitting on the toilet so long. You eat a great diet. And he said, "Well, sometimes I start reading a book and I don't get up." Oh, okay, that's good. But it went away completely when he started to take the B12. And then he was like, "I'm good. I'm not going to take it anymore." And he didn't take it for a couple of years. And I tested him again, and he was still good after a year, because B12 can store for 7 years. And then a little while later, when he was a senior, he goes, "Where's that B12? I need B12 again. Why? My feet are starting to go numb again." And then he noticed that he would be like agitated or irritated when the sun would go down. And that's kind of a melatonin thing. And that's a seasonal affective disorder related to serotonin. Now he reads up on this stuff, and he takes 5-HTP and he takes B12, and he's good. But we don't know. And I don't know his SNPs, because he won't let me test them. Yeah. He's the one that I told you yesterday. He said, "I'm doing everything right. I don't want to know if I'm going to die." Like, it's not that. Okay, so the sulfur metabolism, there's the CBS over here. I don't know if you can read them. They're very pale in those boxes, or what upregulates and what downregulates, because I can't see it from here. Can you see? No? Did it get wiped out? Maybe the box overwrote it. But there's B6, and there's sulfur-containing foods and cruciferous vegetables and other things. I'll make sure that in the when we upload that those get fixed. Okay, that one we talked about, that's at the bottom there. There we go. We're like, wow. So it's increased by and slowed by, okay? So P5P is a form of B6. What else? Cortisol. So yeah, so these are the things. These would go in the chart. We just haven't gotten a chance to translate the information and put it in the chart. And we'll put these in the chart, all this information, okay? And, whoa. So what do you do for sulfur-related? Foundation, foundation, foundation. Supplement as needed. B6, molybdenum, and glutathione are the main supplements that you would want to be looking at if they have sulfation problems. So somebody over here had a question. Raise your hand if you still have a question. And then we'll take a few questions. And then I'm going to try to get through a little bit of the inflammation.
I think I've been misinformed in regards to B12. At the Gerson Clinic, I was taking the cyanocobalamin, and I was mad after I learned. And then I said, I started telling other people, and I feel bad if I've misinformed them. So I was telling my daughters, everybody, to go get the methylcobalamin. Yeah. But I wasn't sure what you said earlier and what I've heard earlier on this conference. I thought, am I misinformed? Please help me understand.
No, to say the methyl. So, my concern with telling everybody blanketly to take methyl B12 is what I talked about earlier, is if they have the COMT. And most people are not doing it. So I'm always cautious. I oftentimes, if I'm not sure, they don't have their genetics and they are sensitive and I have some or they have some issues with brain health, neurotransmitter health, I will have them start with hydroxy B12 or adenosyl B12. Adenosyl B12 is good for the mitochondria, hydroxy. They're more expensive forms. I'll have them start there so they get the B12 status up. And that will change the MCV, and that can change the homocysteine status. But they will, if you're not providing the methyl groups, they will run out if they don't have them from somewhere else. So I will always also look at that and then go, okay, now let's try the liposomal. Let's see how they respond to this. Are they getting a little better? If they're not, then I will go back and get the liposomal and do the drop.
Cyano?
No cyano. No cyano.
It's a cyanide molecule.
It's a cyanide
molecule.
I do know
my chemistry. And
it's
I was
cheap.
Going, I don't.
That's why they do it. It's cheap. It's in all the cheap, CVS brand, whatever.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Quick question. On a couple slides ago, that one that you had where the boxes weren't showing up, it looked like they were saying the same that upregulates and downregulates. Can you click that real quick and go over that with us real quickly?
Okay. Yeah, okay. So sometimes there's a situation, CBS is oftentimes downregulated, and oftentimes it's upregulated. CBS probably more so than some of the others. And we don't know until we see what the manifestations are. So if we're suspicious, if they have a CBS SNP and we test homocysteine, and the CBS, the homocysteine is normal or low, we think that the CBS is upregulated. And if that is the homocysteine is still high, it's downregulated. So depending on whether it's high or low, has a different effects. And that's why. Okay?
Over here?
Okay, yeah. Where are we?
You mentioned Premier Labs does folate, not folic acid. I wanted to also mention that Sun Warrior has only natural, it's actually extracted from organic plants, their folate.
Great.
All the Sun Warrior stuff.
And that's an easy one to extract, right? Because it's so abundant.
Exactly.
So abundant. So yeah, natural food form, best. Sun Warrior has some good stuff. I've forgotten about the fact, I always think of them in protein powders and in green powders. I don't think in terms of the nutrients. But I love the vitamin mineral rush that they have. It's a liquid form and it's all food-based and it has vitamins and minerals in it. So you can talk to Craig if you want more information on that. Thank you, Craig. Anybody else?
Hi. Okay. Back here. If you have a contradiction in test results, so you have methylmalonic acid from a Dutch test shows one thing, and a SpectraCell B12 result shows another. How do you know which is accurate?
Methylmalonic acid is functional, and SpectraCell is what's in the white blood cell. So there's some functional disconnect there. Now, if you had two labs that check methylmalonic acid and they're both different, then I'd be talking to both labs to find out what the heck's going on. And I'd start to mistrust both labs until I figured it out. But SpectraCell, serum B12 is in the serum. That's really useless. SpectraCell is in the white blood cell, which is more useful, and functional is more useful than that.
So if one shows a deficiency and another shows normal?
I'd assume deficiency.
Assume deficiency. And in hydroxy versus adenosyl B12, what's the difference between the two, and when do you know whether to use one versus
the
other?
Good question. Yeah, I oftentimes use like knowing how well their mitochondria or guessing how well their mitochondria are working. If they tend to have a lot of sluggishness and low energy, I'll tend to start with the adenosyl. Yeah. And it's a lot of this is educated guessing. And it's try it, see how it goes, and see how they respond. Yeah. Yeah, where are we?
Hi, Dr. Rainery. Yeah, I'm just confused about if you have LPA, and then you have all the other signs like elevated homocysteine and the CRP or whatever that is, and your MCV, maybe some fatty liver, and so you're showing the signs of you need the vitamin B12. Which one are you supposed to take? Or because if you have COMT
and... homozygous. If you have COMT homozygous, I would start with a non-methylated, like adenosyl or hydroxy. I'd work on that for a couple of weeks. And then I would look at tiny amounts and start to replace some of the hydroxy and the adenosyl with the liposomal as you can, right, to get the methyl groups.
But later,
okay. But small amounts. If you're hetero, it doesn't really seem to matter that much. But I always err on the side of caution. I don't want people to get anxiety. Like, that's not fun, right? And I've seen the people who have been dosed really high, and I don't know what that level is for each individual person. For one person, it might be anything over 1,000. For some person, they may not have the problem until it's 5,000, right? So err on the side of caution, slow and conservative. Make sense? Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Where are we? Oh, hi.
Hello. I wanted to ask about glutathione production. So if you take N-acetylcysteine, does the person automatically make more glutathione, or are there other cofactors that are needed?
It should be everything they need to do it, but is it 100%? Not necessarily. So glutathione, NAC will just break down into its constituents and then rebuild the glutathione. This is the thing, this is an issue, and somebody was going to talk about this, I don't remember who, but when we take in something, oh yeah, Karen's going to talk about this tomorrow. When we take in a protein, right? So say we take in, I'm going to use bone broth, right? Bone broth. Everybody's saying bone broth. Take collagen so that you can make more collagen. But here's the deal. Your body has to break that collagen down into the constituent amino acids and then rebuild it as collagen. So there's nothing magic about taking collagen or bone broth when you can take other foods that contain those same constituent amino acids that could be built into collagen. And it's the same thing with glutathione. Okay? Make sense? Foods? Mushrooms. Really, really good. Sea vegetables. Not for glutathione. Sorry. For glutathione. Avocados, broccoli, eggs. What else? There's bunches of them. Look them up. Do I have a chart? We have a chart in NEPT, I think. Yeah, I think we have a chart in the nutrient module somewhere. There's a big chart that has all the different nutrients and where it comes from. You know what's good for charts like that, though, is the World's Healthiest Foods, whfoods.com. They've done all the work and compiled them into charts. I don't know if they have one for glutathione, but that's a good place. See, these are the things I don't necessarily memorize. I memorize the main ones, but I don't have a list of everything in my head, like which has high glutathione and which has high of that. There's charts. I look them up. Okay? Hate to burst your bubble. I don't have everything in here. Anything else? Okay, that's for the where we're ending with this. And we're going to move on to inflammation. We have 7 minutes before the break. Is that accurate? 7 minutes before the break? Okay, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about inflammation because guess what? Inflammation is the cause of everything. Thank you. That word is getting thrust around. For somebody who doesn't like all or nothing. Whoa, this thing. Okay. Autoimmune and inflammation. So pass out the autoimmune and inflammation and the celiac ones. They're passing them out. So if you're in the genetics detoxification pathways, go to the immune system. Yeah, immune system and celiac genes. I can't find mine now. And it's on page 7. Great, thank you. Raise your hand if you still don't have inflammation and autoimmune, and they'll come by. Michelle has some. In the front row, did she give you some? Oh, yeah, pass them over. Yeah. Yeah, so page 8, we'll have the autoimmune. Also, we can do the immune system. Let's do the celiac first. It's shorter. No, it's not. Who here knows that they have celiac or very severe gluten intolerance? Yes? You have the genes, you don't have symptoms as far as you know. You have never got it. No, I mean, who has had an endoscopy that's looked at the lining, the blunting of the endothelial cells and found that? Anybody in here? It's rare because nobody wants to get that done. It's like, let's just skip the gluten. Don't cut me open and look at my gut, right? But some people would rather get cut open and look at the gut. So we're going to look at celiac, and we have an inflammation. Now, here's what I want to say about this. You're going to see that there's several genes, but the actions are going to take pretty much the same for all of them. Ready? Everybody have them? Take out the celiac one. look at the page in your methyl, your genetic nutrition, genetic, what's it called? Genetic detoxification chart on page 7. And just tell me if there's, if those are not, if those are no calls. Any of those no calls? Because these are important ones to know. They're all genotyped. Great. So here's the thing. A lot of people want to go out and get tested for gluten. And Dr. Tom talked yesterday about a lot of the tests. And I've never had the test. I just say, why should I waste my money? I know how I feel when I eat gluten. I'm not eating anymore. I know what it does in my system. I'm not eating. But a lot of people need that. They need the test result, right? So you just have to feel each person out to see whether they need it or not. Somebody's been gluten-free for 15 years, and you want to run the Cyrex array, whatever, and it requires them to eat gluten in order to see if they're allergic to gluten, but they've been staying away from it for 15 years. Does it make sense to make them sick so you can try to get them better? They've been away from it for 15 years. You make them eat that stuff, they're going to be inflamed for 6 months. So, I just take a different stand than some. I don't really like those allergy tests because they require you to eat things, and they give you false results if you don't. And so if I already know I'm allergic to it, I'm going to stay away from it. But if you want to confirm, the times I will use those tests is if we've gotten rid of all the obvious and they still have certain responses when they eat and we've done the elimination diet, we just can't figure out what it is, right? It might be a gut thing. It might be that they're responding, but they say, no, it's not a gut thing because it's not every meal, right? You might want to look at, is it a macronutrient problem? Do they have trouble with a certain amount of protein or carbohydrate or fat? But if you've ruled it out, you're going, this just doesn't make sense. I've done all my detective skills. And when they have this reaction, I don't seem to have a, can't find a pattern to it. Sometimes those lab tests are done. Here's the reason I got away from doing allergy testing. And I know they're better technology now, but I got away from it because when I first started in practice, I was all gung-ho and I was going to do these allergy tests. And I do the allergy tests and people would come back with 27 things that they were allergic to. And we'd get them off of those foods, but they weren't vigilant about healing their leaky gut. So they'd come back in and go, I'm going to test it again. And those foods were fine, and 27 new foods were messed up. Anybody ever had that experience? But then I had what really got me to stop doing it. I had a couple of colleagues who were suspicious that they really worked. They took two different labs, same blood, sent them to two different labs from the same person, same day, put a different name on them, and got different results. And that's what I said, eh. Now, there's better ones these days. There's a lot of technology improvements. Cerex is a little better because they do a lot of it. Did you have something you wanted to add? Yes, good. That's what I thought you were going to tell me.
Exactly what Rita Marie said. And this was with myself, actually. And these were both very reputable labs. And they test and they retest several times. And I had completely different results. And I must say that it's hard for me to have confidence in those labs. I do think in some circumstances that if you get the results and then the patient can try them, you know, they're having, you know, 4+ response and then they can associate it with that it might be helpful. But, yeah. And I'm not the only practitioner that's done this.
No.
I've talked to several colleagues, so
yeah.
I don't use it.
I don't use them anymore either.
Hardly. At all.
For that reason. And she's an osteopathic
it's very
functional
difficult.
Medicine doctor.
Yeah.
It is hard. And it's hard. You know, usually you do the elimination diet. Fasting and then reintroducing foods is one way to do it, but it's a slow process. Doing an elimination diet where you get it down to 5 to 10 foods that they do tolerate, they stay on that for a while, they feel good, and then you start to add back in the things that are removed, specific order, etc. But in general, like with gluten, here's my take. If you have symptoms, get off of gluten and let's see if it's related. If you have any symptoms at all, people, when can I add it back? When you feel 100%, when all your symptoms are gone and you're at your ideal body weight and you don't have the genetics, because if you have the genetics, it's going to come back when you start to eat it again, right? So that's when I tell them to try it again. And, you know, some people need the test to prove it. I've had the best results in terms of gluten testing with the stool test from Intero Labs. Most of the people I suspect have it, a couple haven't, so I knew it wasn't just that everybody has it according to them, and it makes a huge difference. So if you want to do one to prove it to the person, you either do the genetics or you do that. I know one of my colleagues, he said, I never do the testing anymore for gluten, I just do the genetics. And if they have the genes, they should not eat it. right? Especially if you have homozygous, and I'll tell you which ones. So the ones that are most pertinent, okay? HLA is more of an overall for autoimmune, but it's going to be elevated in a lot, or it's going to be active or snipped in most people with gluten. HLA, DQ, A1, and A2, but the biggies are DQ2 and DQ8. Okay, 80-something percent, I wrote the number down. Celiac risk is increased by tenfold in somebody with HLA DQ8 CC. Okay, so if you've got an HLA DQ and you have a C or a CC, don't eat gluten. If you have an HLA DQ 2.2, is on that list. The 2.5 is not there. It's not on the list, but I added it because it has a lot of research, and I don't know why none of these tests test for it. Then don't eat it. See how they do. If once you get this person to feeling their best and they want to experiment, great. They'll be able to tell better, right? But don't overdo it if you have the genes. Some people say, I go to Europe and I eat it there. Maybe it's different over there. Is it more of a heirloom gluten? But other people say it's no different. So just be careful. If you have symptoms, you're not at your ideal weight, you're still having issues, just don't chance it. Just don't chance it. Does it make sense? I know you don't like me now. What's that? Thank you. I don't like to be the bearer of bad news. So we're at zero. I'm just going to turn the page over on the celiac. The CTLA4 is really important because it makes, if someone has that, they're more inclined, if they have gluten, to develop Hashimoto's. Okay? So it's kind of listed in a thyroid section, but it's also there. And then the SH2B3 is also related to insulin problems. So type 1 type, or LADA, which is an adult onset type 1 diabetes, autoimmune insulin problems. Right? I don't know. I have to look at that. Yeah. If Genetic Genie doesn't test this one, the CTLA.
I have the RS number, the same one that you have for your list.
Really? All right. Show me after. Show me after.
I will.
Yeah. Show me like tonight, because yeah. I got to get through today. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Any discrepancies you guys find, report them back so we can investigate. Because I want to make sure that when we're doing these and recommending to people, that it's accurate. Right. Okay. Good. That's celiac, all right? Yes, are we good? So we're going to go, and we're going to have a few of our NEPT members are going to present case studies, and they're very interesting case studies. One's on diabetes. Another one is on Hashimoto's. Which one? What's yours on, Michelle? Diabetes, schizophrenia, okay? So, and then who else would we... Yours is on general stuff. So they're going to present some cases. They have some slides to show on particular things that they've done to help support people through this stuff. And it's like the trenches, right? The stuff that you guys will be seeing on a regular basis. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back at what time?
3:30, 15-minute break. Go out and get you some sunshine.
Get some sunshine.
Yeah.
Get some exercise.
Come on back.
And come on back. And I really want you to hear what these guys have to say.